President Paxson, welcome back to the Publix Radio.
Thank you very much, Ian. It's great to be here.
Shortly before our taping on Thursday, State Health Director Nicole Alexander Scott announced that she will be leaving that position. Certainly, she's been in the job for 6 years, and it's been a very demanding time during the pandemic. At the same time, Dr. Alexander Scott had a more prominent public role when Governor Raimondo was present. She's been a little bit more in the background since Governor McKee took over, and there have been some tensions evident between Governor McKee and Dr. Alexander Scott. Do you think that change in administration is the main reason why Dr. Alexander Scott is leaving as state health director?
You know, I really can't speculate. I haven't talked to her. I don't know what her reasons are. I just learned the news myself, and I have to say I've been very, very proud of the work she's done over the years, especially in the last 2 years of the pandemic. She's a proud Brown alumna. And I just, you know, whatever she's going to do next, I hope I know she'll do a great job.
Well, let's shift to something a little bit more in your wheelhouse. That is the proposal to create a academic health system between Brown University and a merger between the state's two largest hospital groups, Lifespan and Care New England. You are an enthusiastic supporter of this. You say it would be good for Rhode Island and have a lot of positive economic benefits. Nonetheless, if this merger takes place, Lifespan and Care New England would have about 80% of the healthcare marketplace in Rhode Island. If the merger goes forward, what kind of safeguards should be put in place to guard against any adverse consequences of monopoly behavior?
When you have a merger like this, you get the benefits of scale. You know, both of our systems right now, both Care New England and Lifespan, compared to health systems in other states, they're small, they're subscale. And we can't deliver care at the quality level, value-based care, all the great things that we want to do without the merger. So I am a big proponent. You know, I'm a health economist, and I know that there is always going to be a concern that a merged entity has more market power, potentially, could potentially drive up costs. The thing that people have to remember is that that is under the control of regulators. Right? So you don't have to live with a subscale, fragmented healthcare system when you could have something better given appropriate regulation. You know, I wouldn't speak to exactly what that regulation should look like. I know the Attorney General would have a big say in that, possibly the legislature. But, you know, what we need and what I've heard from Drs. Babineau and Finale is, you know, they are prepared to make very clear commitments on both quality and cost. And we have to make sure that the governance and oversight is in place to make sure that that the health system lives up to those commitments. I think we can do that.
There is a regulatory process before this merger can go ahead. It has to win approval from state and federal regulators. Do you have any concerns that regulators may frown on this merger? And what is the next step if regulators, either at the state or federal level, reject this proposal?
Well, I think right now the focus is really on getting the merger approved and through the regulatory bodies right now. So, you know, the FTC is they've approved it twice in the past. They're somewhat more conservative on mergers than they used to be, although they have approved some hospital mergers in other parts of the country recently. I think there's a chance that this will go through, a better than 50-50 chance. And I know that the health systems are working closely with the Attorney General, providing them all the documents and the Department of Health that they need to do their due diligence to make sure that this is going to be good for the people of Rhode Island, which is important.
One goal of this merger is to make Rhode Island into a hub for life science research and innovation. You've been credited during your time at Brown with helping the university to increase its level of research. But at the same time, the lack of progress on life sciences more broadly in the state is so evident that the Rhode Island Foundation commissioned a study to find out what is holding the state back. What do you say on that? Why hasn't the state made more progress on becoming a life science hub?
When I think about that, and I think it's a good question to investigate, and I'm glad the Rhode Island Foundation is doing what it's doing. You know, go back to the Brookings Report in 2016 that was prepared for the state. It was a roadmap for economic development. And that came out very clearly and said there's great potential in biomedicine and commercialization in Rhode Island. And, you know, you're exactly right. Here we are 7 years later. And while Brown is, you know, our research is going really well and we're building and growing, we haven't seen the commercial activity. I actually think the fragmentation and the weak economic position of both of our health systems is one of the key reasons why that hasn't happened. And that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big proponent of the merger. We recently commissioned an external independent report to take a stab at starting to map out the possible economic benefits that come from a merger. And, you know, you can, there have been some pot shots, were the methods right? Were they not right? You can quibble. Was it like 10,000 more jobs, 8,000 more jobs, 12,000 more jobs? But the point is, you know, this is something that will have tremendous economic benefits to Rhode Island. I would add, though, that, you know, the most important thing is to really look at the quality of healthcare. That's, you know, to my mind, the first thing we want is to have a really high quality healthcare system that serves people well. And then second, we want to look at all of the economic benefits that are going to come from that merger.
On that note, there was a good story in The New Yorker a couple of months ago looking at Costa Rica and how that poor Central American country has been able to greatly expand life expectancy for its people by having a parallel public health system that focuses on preventive care and a healthcare system that focuses on treating disease. In the U.S., it seems the emphasis is much more on treating disease, and that's certainly important, but how do we get that balance better in Rhode Island?
That's one of the things that I am the most excited about in Rhode Island. We are very different from other places. We have a single medical school that prepares people who are going to go out and treat those diseases and find the cures for those diseases. And more than half of the physicians in Rhode Island are affiliated with our medical school. We also have a very excellent School of Public Health. And I think by now everybody in Rhode Island knows about Ashish Jha, our Dean of the School of Public Health. And with a lot of collaboration between the med school and the School of Public Health, we're in a position to help the health system in the state craft an overall plan that improves population health, that prevents disease, but also make sure that when people do get ill, they get the best possible treatments. This is something that I think we can do. We can do better than other places.
Well, let's shift gears to discuss some other topics. You are coming up on your 10-year anniversary as president of Brown. How long would you hope to remain as president?
Well, that thank you for asking. It's hard for me to believe it's been almost 10 years. I love this job and I love Rhode Island, so I have no immediate plans to leave. You know, quite honestly, I would like to see some of the things that we have in play, including building health and healthcare in Rhode Island, building out innovation and commercialization in the jewelry district. I'd like to see those things move a little bit farther along before I pass the reins over to somebody else. But that's not for me to decide. That's for the Corporation of Brown University to decide.
A memorandum of understanding between Brown University and the City of Providence is set to expire this spring that included a stepped up financial contribution by Brown to the City of Providence. Do you support continuing that agreement? And what do you expect that? How do you expect that to be similar or different moving forward?
Well, actually, I believe the expiration is June of 2023. So we have a little bit more time to think about that, and we're going to have a transition in the mayor's office. So, you know, we just started thinking about this, and that will continue. Look, Brown supports the City of Providence. We have to, we should. It's the right thing to do. Right now, we make payments to the city in excess of $6 million a year. And that doesn't include other things that we do that add value directly to schools and things like that. So, yes, this is certainly going to continue. What I hope is that we can think really carefully about how to do things together with Providence that align our interests so that the city is building on what Brown can offer to make the city stronger and, you know, making use of the great education and research that are happening here, in addition to direct payments.
Brown's endowment had a very successful year last year, and the university responded by announcing a significant expansion of its financial aid. I'm sure the members of the Brown community are very appreciative of that. More broadly, we hear a lot about the crushing impact of student debt for American students. What do you think the answer is, or what can be done to help students who are wrestling with that, or graduates who are working to address that?
That's a really good question. And, you know, fortunately, we don't include loans in our financial aid packages. So we have our students, when they graduate, have very limited debt, which is good. The same isn't true for other schools. And I think if you look at this problem, there are different layers to it. One layer is that tuitions have gone up dramatically, especially in public universities, state universities, because they're not getting the support that they should from their legislatures. So I think one piece is to keep tuition growth low, especially in the publics, which educate 75% of college students in America. So that's really important. The other is to expand the Pell Grant. And, you know, Rhode Islanders have a long love affair with the Pell Grant. It was, you know, it came from a Rhode Islander. But it's fallen behind in real terms. And helping make school affordable so that students don't have to take out those loans, that's going to be a really important thing going forward, too.
Brown University used to be an important source of political polling. That was a valuable resource for reporters such as me. The university seems to have stepped away from that in recent years. How come, and is there any chance that we will see the university return to a more robust polling program?
I don't know the answer to that question, whether that will continue again. You know, things change in universities with transitions in leadership. I think most of that polling came out of the Taubman Center, and it's playing a somewhat different role in the university now. I don't know, but I'm really glad to hear that you found it valuable, and I can take that feedback back to the faculty who might be interested in doing that.
Please do. We see how universities such as Brown have had to make a series of changes over time due to the evolution of COVID. This has been disruptive for all of us, perhaps more so for K through 12 students than university students. Nonetheless, there has been an effect. How would you describe the broad takeaway for college students whose college years are intersecting with this pandemic?
What we've learned is that a couple things. One is that for students' health and well-being, being on campus, being in classes in person is the best possible thing for them. And I think that's true for K through 12 as well as college students. So Brown has done everything we can to protect health on campus and in the surrounding community while making sure that our students are coming to class in person, having those conversations that all college students want to have. That's important. One of my big concerns, and this is a broader concern than just Brown, is we've seen a decline in high school graduates going on to college. There's a missing generation of people who I think because they had such a horrible experience during the pandemic in high school, they opted out of college. That's going to be bad for the economy and bad for those people over the long run. So we have to really think about how to recover some of the losses that have hit K through 12 and higher ed more broadly.
Brown University President Christina Paxson, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
That's all the time we have for this week. As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. Got an idea for a subject or a guest? Email us at news@ripr.org. I'm Ian Donis.